Let's go!
Brought to you by P4P Muscle Productions and Entertainment, the number one drug-free athlete sponsorship foundation in the world. Now, I want you to grab a friend, turn the volume up a bit, lean in, and listen to the show where all the athletes want to talk. Fit Talk with Melinda Corsino.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Fit Talk with Melinda Corsino. Today we have the 2016 Spartan Beast Killington Review up for this show. And as always, this show is brought to you by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are interested in the drug-free lifestyle or interested in any of their products, check them out at www.p4pmuscle.com. If you see anything on there, pre-workout, protein, anything you have questions on, feel free to inbox me. And as always, you can use my code Melinda, M-E-L-I-N-D-A, for 15% off any of their products. And tonight, we have two people. Right now, I'm on the line with Jen Klintzman, who I actually met out at when we were in L.A. filming for Broken Skull Ranch. If anyone listened to my Broken Skull Ranch show earlier this year, we had some technical difficulties when we were out there. So we had a couple of girls' shows that were filming at the same time, and we were all kind of stuck in a hotel together for a while. So Jen was actually, she's a lot taller than me. She was on another episode than I was, thankfully, because if I had to go against her, she would have crushed me. So, but she was out there, so I met her, I believe, drinking wine in a jacuzzi, I think.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
She's a Mama 3 personal trainer and an avid obstacle course racer who lives in Texas, and she's done a bunch of cool stuff, but I'm going to let her quickly introduce herself and give us a couple of fun facts about you.
All right, cool. Thanks, Melinda, for having me. Like you said, I'm Jen. I live in Austin, and so we have our first days this week that have been under, like, 95 degrees and, like, all humidity. So it's so amazing. It's so amazing outside. You go outside and it's, like, birds are singing and the world is a happy place because you're not under a wet blanket. So it's been fantastic.
Awesome.
So I'm still kind of in recovery mode from the Ultra Beast. This is the first week that I've done any serious workouts. Since then, just letting the body kind of recoup. Here in Texas, we have some – you can train the uphills, you know, on a Stairmaster or an incline train or something, but the downhills, there's not a whole lot of training that you can do to prepare your quadriceps for that kind of just feeding. And so it's taken me a little bit longer than someone who might live in the mountains to recover. So, and I'm older.
Oh, absolutely.
So it takes longer.
But you can't tell because you look like you're in your early 20s, honestly. What are some, so people listening in that don't know you, what are some, you know, you've won some races, you're pretty competitive in obstacle course mm-hmm. racing. What are some of your accomplishments?
Yeah, sure. So some things I've won. I won the Battle Frog Extreme twice. I won Dallas and Carolina last year. I've won a Savage race before. I've had, you know, podium to Savage race. I've been, you know, top 5 to 10 in some Spartan races, the Beast in Texas, the Sprints in Texas. Let's see, what else? I've won Green Beret Challenge with my team, with Brenna and Mike Morgan and my boyfriend Adam. I've been doing obstacle course racing for about 4 years, and so I have kind of tried, you know, a lot of them. I really like the longer ones better. I can hang in there with a sprint, you know, with the shorter races, but I kind of just like the misery of the long ones, you know, so I tend to do some more of those kind of things. Right now I'm working with Solomon. I'm a brand ambassador for them, and that's pretty exciting. And I'm about to do World Cup of Sputters. Yeah, so I use the Spartan Beast. Most people are like, Ultra Beast is the, you know, the biggest thing, and it is huge, and it was awful, and we'll talk all about it, but I really wanted to use it as a training run for World Cup of Sputters. I knew it was going to be 10-plus hours, and I thought, you know, if I can't run 10-plus hours in September, I'm not running 24 hours in November. So, or if I can, then I know I'm, you know, on a good track. So I did
right.
it, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready. That was half a day.
You're right.
Another half a day? Hey, it's another half a day of running.
Yeah, especially because you like the long run. So we are completely opposite. I love the short races. I do much better at the short races. I won my coin last year placing top 10 in a sprint.
Nice.
Get me in the long races. Oh, dear Lord. The long races, I do them because I have a really cool team of people that go out there and do them. And I like to challenge myself and prove to myself that I can, you know, be on a mountain for that amount of time. And I try my best to place well within my heat that I run in. But I don't excel for sure in those long races. So, but I'm glad to have you on with all of your experience. And I've done Spartan at Killington. If that was my fourth or fifth year that I've done it at Killington. So I wanted to bring someone else on that did the Ultra, which obviously you're just running that twice. So you have twice the experience this past time. So I just wanted to do a review, talk about the race. A lot of people don't understand. They think, I don't know if they think it might be easier than it's set out to be, but I have to say it's one of the most mentally tough races that I've done. And I think Killington, Beast at Killington is a lot different than a lot of other beasts around the U.S. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I did Beast out in Tahoe last year for the World Championships, and same mileage as Killington last year, relatively, and I beat my time by like an hour and a half. And it's not like I was improving. You know, I did it a couple weeks after, and it's just like, this course is just terrible. So in your opinion, in Spartan Beast and Killington, what is the toughest obstacle for you, whether it be the mountain or just one of the obstacles that they have on the race?
Yeah, the obstacles seemed like nothing. I mean, I've come away from a Texas Beast, you know, black and blue from obstacles being really hard or super muddy or slippery or, you know, or whatever. I had barely any bruising. I was totally fine. It was just the terrain, you know, and the fact that a lot of the ups and downs, especially the downs, they're not really groomed. And so there's little holes and there's potholes, and you never know if you're going to step in one or twist an ankle or there's, you know, there's all kind of, then there's not really a way to slow down. So like the second lap, the first lap, I was trying to keep myself from just tumbling down when we were going, and I had the brakes on a lot and it really killed my legs. On the second lap, I was like, oh, well, this is the key. You're just too tired to stop. And you go way faster the second lap down the mountain. I can no longer stop myself. So I would literally tell people, I would be yelling as I'm running down, you know, the very last descent. I was like, I cannot move to the right or to the left. I'm too tired. Can you please just scoot out of the way? I'm coming. Just please one step to the right or left. I'm coming straight behind you. And I can't do anything about it. I think that was the hardest part, is going down. And the ups. I mean, just that last, the last climb, the death march on the second lap, where you know what's coming. You know, we got to about mile 8 on the second lap, and you're in the woods going up. You go about 3/4 of the way up the mountain. And people are going, oh, this is the death march we've heard about. And I would just go, no, it's not. I was like, wait, what? And I'm like, no. At one point, this one girl said, what's coming up next? And I said, you know, I'm 12 hours in at this point, something like that, 11 hours in. And I go, I'm not going to tell you, but I'm really, really sad about it. And they were like, what? And I was like, it makes me really sad. What's about to happen again? And you're just going to just eat some calories right now. Like, sit down and eat whatever's in your pack because you're going to need it.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the hardest part.
Yeah, the terrain for sure. I mean, if you go to the gym, if you work out, if you have upper body strength, the obstacles are not that bad.
No, they're not.
You know, they're almost like the obstacles
there,
are almost
tired,
like a break.
Yeah,
they're almost like a break. I mean, and the swimming, if you're not a swimmer, there was a swim this year. There's usually a swim. They took it out the past couple years because of some issues. But if you're not a swimmer, the swim can, you know, tend to wear you out. You might get cold. But honestly, if you're an athletic person, the obstacles, and to give people listening in that don't know about the obstacles at Spartans, I mean, they have everything from Atlas stone carries to spear throws to swimming to all these cool
rope
rigs,
climbs.
Rope climbs. I mean, it's a variety of different things that are just there to ultimately tire you out. And if you miss an obstacle, or you choose not to do an obstacle, which I hate when that, I truly believe that people doing these races, especially something like a Beast, where they should be like a seasoned athlete, should really be trying every obstacle unless there's a physical disability. That's my personal opinion. But, you know, if you choose to skip an obstacle, you know, you have to do 30 burpees. And so that they're really there just to tire you out. And I know for me, it's been really cool through, like, continuing to do CrossFit and powerlifting and things like that. My ability to do the obstacles with more ease has been awesome to see.
It's a life changer.
I remember starting, starting 5 years ago, I think I did my first sprint for fun, and I couldn't climb a rope. I could not get up the rope, even with knots in the rope. Now, you know, I can climb up a rope with no knots. No, I mean, it's not even an issue, but it's just funny to, you know, you keep doing them year after year, and you just like, oh, these are nothing.
But I couldn't climb up my first one. My first one was a sprint, too, and it took me, I think, 2.5 hours. I mean, it's something crazy. When people are like, I'm so out of shape, I have to walk. And I'm like, listen, my first sprint, I just had a baby. She was like 3 months old. My friends had just done a warrior dash. They're like, it's like that. It's going to be like that. It would take us like 45 minutes. 2 hours later, I'm still on this course sobbing. I'm doing burpees at every obstacle. I can't get over walls. I can't climb ropes. I can't do anything. I'm dehydrated because I'm like, you know, a nursing mother. It was, I'm crying. I'm just like walking down the course crying. And so I tell people all the time, I'm like, you know, and on that same course, that exact same course, the sprint 2 years later is where I got my, you know, got fourth and got my world championship. So you can do it. You know, I could do none of it and walked the whole time crying. And now I just got fourth place and qualified for the world championships. 2 years later, same course. I was like, you just have to pick a goal and just work it. What can
You're going in and out. Are you in a bad area?
How to develop these skills.
Yep.
And then run a lot.
And I know a lot of people, maybe not, they're not, you know, as accomplished with a fourth place finish, but that have really seen improvement with themselves from year to year. So going into these, it's really important to, your goal is to beat your own time. And it's tough because the courses can vary year to year, but which is why it's nice to be able to compare yourself percentage-wise against the people that are running in your age group or in your group. But it's just really cool to hopefully see yourself improving each year. And I mean, we make gravel buckets and carry gravel buckets up and down our driveway, like just to get used to, because that I hate that. That obstacle.
Oh, it's the worst.
Oh, my God. It's the worst. And especially I'm really short and small, so I have, like, little T-Rex arms. So try to, like, get around a bucket. I'm like, oh, my God. It's still hard for me, and I still don't excel at it, but I'm much better at it than I was before I started practicing, so...
Yeah, the second lap, the bucket carry, it took me four boyfriends at the bottom going, just pick it up, just bear hug it, and, you know, carry. And I was, you know, I was just like, shut up, shut your face. You know, I can't.
It's not that easy. The mountain absolutely wears on you. We have new people that join our running group every year. And we try to tell them what they're getting themselves into, but we try to convince them to do it anyway. And it's always like, a holy shit, I didn't realize it was going to be that hard. Like, oh, I can run. Like, I can run a half marathon. I can do these obstacles, no problem. Yeah. The mountain absolutely killed you. And it does. And like you said, for the I am a terrible downhill runner. So it really wears on my knees to go downhill in that type of terrain and how steep it is. And there was multiple people that I saw that kicked the butt, like had to get taken off the course because they twisted something, stepped on something, fell. I mean, it's dangerous. So you can only go so fast unless you're really used to it. And it just crushes your soul. And I don't know how you did two laps of it. After one, I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy to see the finish line. If I had to restart it again, I just don't know.
Yeah, I know. Well, I thought it was going to take me, I hadn't really looked at previous times from winners and things. And so I just, based on doing Texas Beast, I was like, oh, but no, I had like an hour, you know, or I'd done Utah and I knew what I'd do Utah in. And I was like, that's a mountain. It's probably about the same as that. And so I was thinking like 3 to 4 hours a lap. So like between 6 and 8 hours total. And so luckily in the hotel the night before, that kind of came up with people milling around. I'm like, oh, yeah, like 6 to 8 hours. And he's like, this guy that was in the lobby goes, per lap, right? And I was like, no, I mean, total, right? He goes, last year it took us 8 hours to do one. And I'm like, well, surely you were, like, bear crawling. But then I went and looked, and the average elite female time last year was 7.5 hours for the average elite. And I was like, okay, I need to go back to the grocery store because I don't have enough food. Let's go back. And so I hadn't brought my hydration vest because I thought, you know, 3 hour laps, I'll just stick a squeezy Solomon bottle in my sports bra and I'll stick a couple gels and a ski belt. I'll be fine.
Right.
So I still didn't have my vest, but I had, you know, I had a little bottle in my sports bra. I had candy bars shoved in my socks. It was just yard sale. Like, we got done, and I'm like, I'm a yard sale of snacks. I have food shoved in all the little places all over my body. It's so inconvenient. And so the first lap, I did run out of calories, and I got to about mile 13 and was just kind of crashing hard. And I'm like, okay. But I knew it was calories. Like, I knew, I'm like, I'm not super tired. I just know I'm in such a deficit right now, calorie-wise. I just need to eat. If I can just get around and eat, I'll be fine. So I got into transition, you know, with an hour and a half to spare or something, 2 hours to spare. I took a bottle of apple juice and then, like, grabbed everything I had and shoved it in my socks and my pants and took back off. So
let me interrupt
me
you for
1 second.
Before.
Yeah, sure.
Keep that thought. I'm going to grab Gary on. And then,
So
for people listening in, I have Gary Lombardo calling in right now. I'm going to put him live, and then Jen and I are going to get back. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So you're live right away. I was just, Jen and I were in the middle of a conversation about food, but before we continue, why don't you quickly introduce yourself to people listening in, and, you know, you have a lot going on, a lot of certifications, so let people know who you are.
Yeah, no problem. Hi, everyone. My name is Gary Lombardo. I'm a coach as well as an athlete. I'm a certified Spartan SGX coach as well as USAT, that's United States Triathlon Level 1 coach, amongst several other things. And I'm also overall multi-sport athlete and work with athletes from all different experiences levels, help them really push themselves to the next level. And as well as myself, I do quite a bit. I've done a number of expeditions overseas, Ironman triathlons, and a whole bunch of different obstacle course racing. So love the sport, all types of sport, love adventure, and happy to be here today.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. And before Jen and I get back to this lovely conversation about food, so Jen that I have on, she placed seventh in the Ultra Beast for women this year, as well as has placed very well and has been obstacle course racing for a while. And you, I mean, when you did the regular beast this year, and when I had caught up with you, when you finished, you had a very good age placing. Did it stick when all the results came in? Because you were in the top five for your age bracket, I believe, when I caught you at the finish line.
Yeah, I stayed in the top five for my age group in the competitive heat. So I think when I saw you, I was number two, but I dropped a few places to number five. But I'm still happy with that. I'm like, hey, that works for me. And, it was a great race.
Yeah, how long did it take you for the lap?
I did the race in 5:22 this year.
5:22.
I always look at my pace per mile because the race in comparison to previous years, because, you know, that's how I mark how well I improve, as well as how I advise my athletes to do the same thing. Because the course, you know, as you guys know, the course changes every year, right? It's unpredictable.
Right.
You know, it's 13 plus miles, so it's kind of hard to compare raw, you know, finishing time to finishing time year over year. I always look at the per mile pace, and again, that's it's a pretty good indicator, even though, again, the course changes and the miles are all different. But I was able to shave about 53 seconds per mile off my pace. So that's it was a big win for me this year. So I felt good about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad that you stuck in the top five for your age group. That's amazing as well. For people listening, and I haven't told people my time, so I finished at, I believe it's 7 hours and 1 minute. which was really pissed me off at the end because I didn't know that. I think I would have sprinted a little bit more just to get under 7. I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. But
yeah.
I still, for myself personally, that was a good finishing time for me. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I do not excel in these longer races. I'm much more of a short race kind of person. So I was very happy with myself, and I think I placed top. I think I was in the top 14% of the competitive heat for females, and I am good to go with that. But
yeah.
You know, just to give people a comparison of now, Jen, one lap for you, because you obviously did the ultra. How long did it take you to do that first lap? Which obviously
you're
going
lap,
at a different pace because, you know, you have a lot longer to go. 6.
Yeah, the first lap was 6, and the second lap was right at 7, I think.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, and there's, it got dark, so that slowed us down a lot at the end. I had my headlamp wrapped around my arm, and one of the batteries fell out of the bucket carry, and I grabbed it and shoved it back in, but I shoved it back in backwards, and I was like, I can't even stop and flip the battery around because I knew if I took that time, someone's going to catch me, and there was a bunch of us right together, and so I was just kind of running with people that had their headlamps on, so that's, you know, that's a lot slower, and obviously you're just exhausted. And waiting in line and some rails and stuff like that, you know. People were really good about getting out of the way, but there was still backups. So it's always going to be slower.
Absolutely. Yeah, that second lap is always going to be slower for you guys because you end up mixing in with everyone that starts at noon and, you know, past then. But Gary jumped in on our conversation right as we were talking about, you know, preparing food for the race, and Jen was saying, you know, based on other past beasts, thought that it was going to be a lot shorter race for her, so didn't pack enough food. I know I've had the experience of just not timing my food, and this is the first year I've timed my eating, which was huge because in past races I've started shaking because I've been so hungry. And keep in mind, I'm only doing one lap. I'm not doing two, but and I think I ended up chatting with Gary about this after the race was over, but this is the first year I timed and made sure I was eating on a schedule, and I was never hungry, which was a huge thing for me. And I don't know if Gary, you have anything you want to add in on how you prepare nutrition for a race like this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, nutrition's huge. Typically for me, and what I advise the most athletes I work with as well, it's like any race over, you know, 2+ hours. Of course, that's going to vary from athlete to athlete, but it's going to, you know, 2+ hours, you typically need to be thinking about nutrition. Of course, there's a whole bunch of different variables involved with that from, you know, the type of athlete, how big they are, how heavy, and the weather, and all these different things. But for me personally at this race, it was about making sure I, you know, carry enough fluids, take in enough fluids, and I sit down and I calculate all that out, you know, based upon my needs well in advance, calories, carbohydrates, you know, amount of fluids and electrolytes that I need, and then I know pretty much, you know, having done this for a number of years, exactly what I need for the most part, and then I'll experiment, I'll use it, I'll put it into practice during my long runs, and that's exactly what I did on race day. And I just carry a water bottle and around my waist and refill at the stations. And I carry some mixed powder. I personally like Scratch Lab stuff. That's my personal choice. And I like their gummies and I take a variety of different things. So I think it really varies from person to person, of course, the type of things you like to eat and what you prefer. But that tends to be what works for me. And it's, for me, it's about, it's the timing as well. Making sure you're fueling all, you know, at the beginning of the race in particular, because if you don't, you're going to pay for it at the end. So, and this race was fortunate because it was pretty cool out.
Yeah.
We didn't have the intense heat like we did over the summer, thank God, which made a huge difference. I think, had that been the case, I think, I know personally my time would have been slower and nutrition would have been more of an issue, but, I definitely felt like I had it dialed in. So I was feeling really good about that this year.
Yeah, definitely. I know it made a big difference for me, just paying more attention to it rather than just starting to eat when I get hungry, which I know is a terrible idea, but I get my head all in the race, and I just lose it. And every year I've done that, and I'm like, I won't eat until like 3 hours, like 3 miles into the course, and by then I'm hungry. And then I've just screwed myself up for the rest of the race at that point. So it made a huge difference to prepare. And being that I've done it for many years now, it's starting to get it down, finally, being a little bit smarter about this. But, Jen, what for the toughest mutter that you're doing in November for 24 hours, what's that like for you for food? Do you get to carry all that with you? Do you stop? How does that work?
No, it's short laps, and so that's it makes it different than, you know, say, Ultra Beast, where you kind of have to carry everything for 6 hours. It's the lap shouldn't take more than, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours at the most, really, and you can come back through to your tent, to your pit, every lap. And so you might have, like, a gel with you or something, you know, something light, but you can really come back through and get all your nutrition at your tent or from your pit crew. So that'll be so much easier because you don't have to really carry anything.
Right.
What I did learn from Ultra Beast is that, you know, I did Goose, I did Tailwind. I really like the Tailwind a lot. I need to be able to have more of that with me. It's another liquid nutrition, kind of like Scratch Labs. But it all got so sweet by the end that I was like, I need a toothbrush. I just cannot handle the sweetness. And so I think what I'll do is alternate, something kind of sweet-ish. Like the Tailwind is even a little sweet, not too much, but a little. And maybe something salty the next lap. Just kind of alternate so that I don't get overwhelmed with, you know, just junk. I'm going to make some little homemade baby food kind of pouches and put things like chicken and rice, you know, like a salty chicken and rice or salty chicken noodle soup in those. You can put the lid on and just kind of squeeze it in your mouth, grab one, squeeze it in your mouth and run off. You're not having to chew. Chewing is a little complicated. My mouth got really, really sore by the end of the second lap. We got back to the hotel, and I couldn't even eat till the next day because my mouth was so just dry and sore from breathing for 14 hours heavily. It felt like I had strep throat for a couple of days. And so I'll probably put a lot of coconut oil mixed in with my foods, too, just for extra fat, and then just to kind of wet your whole, like, keep your mouth and throat oiled up and lubed. Sounds kind of gross, but it just, I mean, it was so painful. I'm like, why can't I swallow? It
hurts. I saw your picture. I saw the picture you posted after the Ultra Beast with everything, and I was like, oh, my God, I don't know how you guys do it.
I didn't even think I looked that bad, but when my grandmother posted
no,
on
you
it,
didn't,
like,
you
I
didn't
just
want
to hold you, and I'm like...
Oh, your post was just, I was like, oh, she just sounds like she's in so much pain. I don't blame her. I'm in pain, and I just did half of what she did. But for you guys, a lot of people listening in probably have not done a Spartan Beast before. So for each of you, and we can start with Gary, for someone coming into their first Beast, especially Beast at Killington, which we were kind of going over before you got on, that Beast at Killington just seems like a whole different animal compared to some other beasts that I've done and that she's done that are around the U.S. So for someone saying, I'm going to do a Spartan Beast in 2017, I'm going to Killington, you know, what is some advice that you have for them as far as training and kind of what they're in for? And I'll let Gary start with this one.
Yeah, no, totally. I think, and I get asked that a lot too, you know, the first thing I always say is, like, you know, understand what your goal is, right? What are you trying to do? And for most people doing it for the first time, I think it's important to set a goal of just complete the race, right? Just get through it. Don't necessarily have a time, particularly in a race like the Killington Beast, which is fairly hilly, you know, a lot of vertical gain, a lot of vertical descent, pretty challenging, you know, a lot of different obstacles they may not have seen before, certainly not at that length. So it's really about, you know, defining the right goal, having a realistic expectation, just, you know, complete the race, get through it. Definitely approach your training in a well-rounded way. I mean, I think it's about, obviously, that everyone thinks of the physical training, which is absolutely crucial, and you need to make sure you think through what that looks like, have a plan for how you're going to approach that as well as everything. You know, as well as your nutrition, as we just talked about, and then your mental training, right? Sort of like, how are you going to train your mind for it? So those are sort of the three pillars of three legs of the stool, so to speak, in terms of how I advise people, anyone I work with, newbies, experienced people, regardless of who they are, and no matter how they're training for the race, those are the three things I really think they need to think about and figure out your plan, right? How are you going to get there? Have a plan of some sort. You know, what's your goal, and then how are you going to work those things over the course of a season? And make sure you get good measurable goals to kind of see how you're progressing. You know, if your goal is to complete the race, then you're going to want to make sure you get certain objectives around, again, those three things throughout the year that you can measure yourself and then execute, which is really important as well. But for a race like Killington, I think it's really important to get out there, and or for any Spartan race. Ultimately, it's an endurance sport, which a lot of people tend to lose sight of. They think of the obstacles, and certainly the obstacles are all about testing strength and athleticism among so much of other skills, but the biggest obstacle is the run itself, right? So it's all about endurance. In the case of Killington, it's a lot of uphill and downhill, so making sure you get out there and jump on some hills, right? Get out there and do some hill repeats, carry buckets up hills, throw sandbags on your back, like simulate some of the things that you'll actually have to do in the race and make it a little bit harder for yourself. But those are the things I typically advise people. And you know, don't go out and spend a ton of money on clothes and stuff like it's your first race. Like, wear what you got and see if you're going to like the doing that distance, doing the sport, and check it out. And if you do, then you can go out and make some of that investment as well. And most of all, have fun. I think it's really important to, you know, as you're running out there, take a look around, and not just the scenery, but the athletes, right? All your fellow athletes that are out there, and enjoy the community. You're really part of something special, and you should take advantage of it and really take a step back and enjoy the day. Those are the things that I tend to kind of lead with in terms of how to prepare for Killington.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Well, Jen, what about you? What do you have to add to that?
Yeah, a couple of things. One that Gary touched on is the mental part of the race. That, you know, this race, it is incredibly physically challenging, but so much of it is mental. I mean, I know so many people that got to the transition in time. They hit the time hack, and then they were just like, I'm bored. Or, you know, if you go in thinking there's a possibility that I'm not going to start the second lap, you absolutely will not, because everything in your body physically says there's no way. Like, don't go do that again. That's dumb. You should probably just go sit in the hot tub. Oh, that knee that was given you. Oh, that knee is definitely, you know, a problem. And your mind will come up with every reason why you shouldn't go on. Even my girlfriend that finished right after me, she's on the death race, and she's out there, and at one point she's like, I just can't do it anymore. I'm like, well, you can. Just keep walking. I was like, what are you going to do, sit here? You're just going to lay down? Like, you just have to finish at this point. And you just keep going. And so just that mental side of, you know, and I'm not saying keep going through with an injury. I think that people think, you know, that you have to keep pushing through even if you're hurt. Absolutely not. If you're hurt, it's not your day. I've DNF'd two races, one with hypothermia, one last year I got hurt at a race, and I was out almost this entire race season from that injury, and I couldn't go on. I had to get carted off the course. I'm not saying push through that. What I'm saying is just know that your mind is going to play tricks on you and tell you to quit. And you just have to not listen to that little voice. And then also, the second part on the training is to know what you're training for. You know, I have clients that I write programming for these as well, and they only want to do these super fun workouts where they're kind of getting destroyed and all these, you know, sprints and, you know, stuff. I'm like, that is part of the race. But in these long races, the amount of sprinting that I did was absolutely zero. Absolutely zero. I'm just trudging along, going up the hill. It can be pretty incredibly boring. And the training is a little boring. It's not glamorous at all. There's no glamour in it. The, you know, right before the race, the week before, the training I did, I went to my gym, did my 1 hour, you know, intense workout at the gym, went to the trail, did an hour of long intervals, and then did another hour of just walking. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to walk for the rest of my life. This is a lot, like, oh my God, just walking for an hour. But it was just mental. I'm like, well, okay, just keep walking. Just keep walking. And, you know, when you're in a race like this or World's Toughest Mudder, where you're probably going to do a lot of walking. Walking is important training. You use your feet differently. You use your legs differently. You use your muscles differently. You stand differently. Everything is different. And so walking and slow jogging are really integral parts of training for these long events. You know, wait to do, you know, a ton of your sprint training for spring whenever all the short races are going on. You know, these are just kind of a mental grind, and you have to train that. You know, you have to just go, oh, yeah, I've been on this treadmill for 45 minutes. It's hot outside, and I got to sit here for another 30 minutes on the treadmill.
and just stare at everybody as they're doing fun stuff over there on the gym floor. I'm just still walking up this treadmill, you know. Just kind of get over it and know that that's what your sport is, you know, for the time being. So I think those two things, just kind of having your mental game on and then training for what this event is, you know.
Yeah. I obviously, you guys know a heck of a lot better than I do, but one thing I want to add to everything that you all touched on is positive self-talk through the race.
Yeah.
I noticed for myself, because, again, the longer races are not really my forte, so I need to talk myself through the race, whether that be I'm talking out loud, I'm talking to someone else that I meet, because you will meet people because you are all miserable and you're all together.
Yeah.
So part of being on that mountain in Killington, not so much in the short races, you're not talking as much at pretty much at all, but in these long grinding races where you're on a mountain walking, you cannot possibly, unless you are a highly elite athlete, you will not be running this entire race. You're only going to be running a portion of it. You're hiking up these insane grades, and you're talking to people. You're sharing your misery. But what I found is if you keep the conversation positive for as long as you can, it makes it not as miserable. You know, you're talking yourself, like Jen mentioned, you're in pain and you want to find every reason to, God, I've done it. I've done 6 miles of this. I can just walk off. Like, this has been a great time, but I don't need to finish it. Your body is going to start breaking down. But as long as you stay positive, like, I can do this, I'm hiking up a freaking mountain, one step in front of the other. I've done things harder than this. I did a CrossFit workout last week that was way harder than this. I'm just walking. Like, the longer you keep these positive stuff going, I'm bored. Like, I'm walking up a mountain, and then I start talking to the guy next to me. Hey, how long have you been doing these for? And you just, you keep going. And the more positive you stay, I had a friend that did this year, and it took her, I think it took her around 9 hours to do the regular Spartan Beast, and she came off the mountain. I said, how was the race? And she said, you know what? I stayed positive through that entire thing. It was great. Okay.
That's
you know, that was her way to get through it and keep it positive. So with everything mixed in, you have to know you can do it.
And that's right before the race. It was that morning. And so my boyfriend was giving me a pep talk. And I was like, is it gonna be, you know, I don't even know if it's going to be fun. And he said, no, it's not going to be fun. It's going to be miserable. You're going to be out there from dark to dark, climbing up a mountain. It's going to be miserable. He said, but you love it. He's like, just enjoy the misery. It's going to be a grind, but it'll be a happy grind. Just keep it a happy grind. And so anytime I'd start to get, like, down, I would literally tell myself, happy grind. It's a happy grind. It's a happy grind. Like, you know, yeah, I'm miserable, but I chose to be here. I want to be here, and I want to do well. And it's a happy grind.
Yeah,
and
I think I would say that to myself
and be like, yeah.
It's certainly about, you know, I think it's mentally, you guys are saying, you know, move forward, keep going. And that's definitely the case. And I think physically as well, right? Like I always tell people, don't stop, right? Just you're walking, just keep going. Don't take prolonged breaks, right? That's kind of my strategy. I tell people, yeah, exactly. Eat while you're going, you know, stop, fill your water bottle, but keep going. Don't take these long 10-minute breaks, you know. And typically beginner athletes, you know, they like to run with other people, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And you need to go at the pace of that other person or vice versa. They need to go at your pace. And that's fine if you approach it that way. But if you're on your own and you've got a goal in mind, and whether it's even just complete the race or complete it in a certain time, whatever it may be, I always just advise people, mentally, you know, prepare for that. That's why go out and train. Like, carry – go out in the rain and in the dark and carry a bucket up a hill, right? Like, that's going to be worse than what you're probably going to do at the race, but at least you know that you've done that prior to entering the race, that mentally and physically that you can do that and just continue to push through it. And one of the things I think is most rewarding about athletes who approach the beast for the first time and actually do it and complete it or any race that they didn't think they could do, which tends to be the case with a lot of beginners who they're a little bit hesitant. Even me, you know, even when I first got into the sport of OCR, I was always like, I don't know if I can do it, right? Yeah, coming out of the world of triathlon and having done Ironmans and tons and tons of half Ironmans as well, as well as ice climbing, a whole bunch of other things, like things that I've really pushed myself. I was very hesitant about OCR, like, oh no, I don't think I can do it. And then it's like that in any sport, an event that really seems daunting, like the beast, at Killington in Vermont, and it is daunting, right? But you do it, and then one of the most rewarding things is when you're done, the feeling of accomplishment, but then also you're like, you know what? I think I can push myself even further, right? That's the reward of it, and think of that along the way during the course of all your training, but then also during the race, and I think that serves as a real good mental sort of reward for yourself, or like just think about how great you're going to feel after, and that's the case even today. You know, this is my third Killington Beast, and no matter what results, I'm always happy with it, but I'm always like, man, you know, that was awesome to get through, and you sort of live off that high for a few days, and that kind of gets me through my training as well throughout the year, which can be pretty grueling at times. So I think it's all good stuff for beginners to keep in mind.
And just in life, right? Like you don't realize how much your body can handle. You don't realize, like, I never thought I'd do one and then sign up six more times or five more times. Yeah. What am I doing here? But every time I finish it, I'm like, that was absolutely miserable. Get me online.
Right.
I'm going to sign up again. You know, and,
keep doing. Yeah, and like you said, like I think you're making a good point. Like it's about the unknowns that you're able to deal with in your life as well, because the Spartan training or obstacle course racing is all about, testing yourself and trying to prepare for the unknown, right? Which is what life is all about, right? So, even in the real world, things happen, right? And you physically you got through that race, mentally you got through a tough race, and then there's a lot of stuff going on in your life, whether it's, you know, a loss of a job or a loved one or a whole number of other horrible things that can happen, but it kind of puts it in perspective for you, where you're like, you know what, I've gotten through it, I've dealt with adversity, I've persevered in the race, and I can do that in life as well. So I think there's a lot of parallels, right? And I always tell athletes, and the ones that I really see that sort of have this transformative experience through OCR as well as overall endurance racing are the ones that really dug deep, right, and have enjoyed that, the journey to get there and then the actual race, and then feel like everything else in their life is, all the adversity in their life is not as daunting, right, as they might have seen, because they've gotten through something like the Killington Beast. So I think it's a great feeling, right, and even today, like even, you know, my life and all the stuff, and I look back and I'm like, you know what, I do all the stuff and I get through it, right? And perseverance and all that stuff, I apply directly to all the stuff that I face on a regular basis. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, too, and one of the big rewards and benefits for doing OCR.
Great. Well, we are heading towards the end before they kick us out. You know, I say these shows are going to be a half an hour, but then we just get talking and everything just starts coming out. So it just keeps flowing, which is nice. But I want to thank you guys both for coming on the show tonight, and it was great to be able to talk to an ultra beaster that finished, and then Gary, which obviously has a ton of athletic experience in multi-sports and placed phenomenally in his age group, and especially in a competitive heat. I mean, you have to realize in these Spartan races, there's the elite heat, there's the competitive heat, both very similar, a lot of similar types of athletes. Elite is just going for money, and then there's the open heat, which is everyone else. It's competing in any of them. The course is still the same. There's no difference. You're just competing with a different class of people to try to maybe go through the course a little faster rather than getting stuck at obstacles and such. But, he raced in the competitive heat and did phenomenally in his age group, so I think that's great. And, Jen, congratulations on seventh place. That's also absolutely fantastic.
Thanks. I'm just going to add one super quick thing about age group really fast, if you don't mind.
You have 1 minute.
I have a lot of. So the age thing is not a matter, is not a factor. So in the top 10 in the Ultra Beast, 5-4 were Masters women. Amazing. And in the regular Beast, in the top 5-3 were Masters. And so people think I'm too old. You're not too old.
No,
like,
you're not too old.
These are all 40, 50-year-old women. They're killing it.
They kill it. I always say, I never look at my age group placing because I'm in the 20 to 30 or 25 to 30. I never look at it. Because it's always the women in their 40s that are killing it. So, agreed.
Yep.
Absolutely agreed. So you were not too old, believe me. I have freaking 60-year-old women passing me. but thank you guys again. We're about to get kicked off the air.
Thanks, Melinda.
So, thank you guys again.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck in
Take
all
care.
Your training
you.
And everything. All right, thanks. We'll talk later.
Take care. Bye.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye.
My family's well-being is what I'm all about. And now with Caseta by Lutron, I've got that peace of mind. Caseta is a smart home lighting system I control from my phone. It's like magic. I was out of town last week and had set the porch lights to come on at dusk. So my family felt safe, like I was there. Caseta by Lutron. Simple to use, simple to set up. Learn how you can win a $5,000 smart home upgrade at ourlifeupgrade.com. No purchase necessary. Ends 12/15/16. Online radio listeners, help keep internet radio free and its advertising relevant to you. Simply open your radio player and click on the survey banner now and take a quick questionnaire about the advertising you hear on your favorite online station. It only takes about 1 minute to complete and submit your opinion. Your answers will detail the advertising you've heard recently across different radio stations. So make your voice heard. Open your radio player, click on the survey banner to participate now. Thank you for listening and for your participation.
Date night is a big night for us.
My family's well-being is what I'm all about.